Yesterday I spoke about an article, or I referred to an article in Business Insider that made it quite clear that if you are over 60, provided you have registered on the system, that you could go to get your vaccine. You didn't need a specific SMS or voucher or whatever you would call it. But after the show, we got a tremendous amount of pushback and comments from you saying, well, I tried it. I listened to you. I tried it and it didn't work. So there does seem to be some confusion around the process. Business Insider again this morning talking about the algorithms that are used to determine when you get your vaccine. So we are very, very fortunate this morning to chat to Nicholas Crisp. He's the Department of Health's Deputy Director General, and he's been dealing with a lot of this sort of thing and trying to manage, I would imagine, what is a very, very complex situation. Nicholas, good morning. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me.
So there does seem to be some confusion, and I'm not sure where it all starts and where it's all come from. Because, as I said, there were two articles in Business Insider, once telling us that if you're over 60, as long as you've registered, you can simply go and get the vaccine. A lot of our listeners didn't have that experience. Can you just tell us what the situation is?
Thanks very much. So I spoke to the reporter who wrote that first article, and we've clarified, and that's why he's done the second article, which we've, the media is helping us to convey information to the public. So the situation is we strongly, strongly discourage walk-ins.
Okay.
For the health system to plan and ensure that they have sufficient vaccines if they aren't unable to know how many people they've scheduled for the following day. Second thing is if people just arrive and they're large groups of people gathering around, uncatered for at the site, they create a potential super spreader event. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. It seems to be, it does cut off every now and then, but mostly it's quite clear.
Cutting off for me as well.
Yeah, but it is absolutely right, and there's been a lot of concern around that. That people saying, well, I don't want to go and stand there for hours in a group with people who actually might expose me while I'm going to get the vaccine.
Yes, absolutely. So the way EVDS works is that it is scheduling people to go to a site that is reasonably close to them. So in urban areas, the algorithm looks for people within a 10-kilometer radius of an active site. And in the rural sites, it's looking for 30 kilometers. So if you live outside of that radius of an active site, you just have to be patient and wait. And as sites become available, then you will be scheduled and called. And then what it does is it looks at a first-come, first-served basis from when you registered. And it will look at the slots. It'll first look for your, if you have a medical aid or not, and it will send insured patients preferably to private sites and uninsured patients to public sites. See whether you ask for a morning, afternoon, or weekend slot, and it will do its best to slot you to one of those schedules that you asked for. So that's how it works at the moment, and we really ask people, please do not cram to vaccination sites. We know about you, and you will get an SMS in due course.
Well, we only know about you if you've registered. So let's just be clear to our listeners. Please register. Make sure that you've registered. And if there's somebody living with you or somebody that you know who is struggling to register, help them. This is one of the things that you could do for other people at the moment. We always have that question, you know, what do we do? What is our role during COVID? And we always say to people, well, we each do what we have to do and what we can do. Now we do actually have something we can do besides making sure that we are safe and the people around us are safe, is help people to register. Because I think, let's try and clarify this. From what I understand, what the algorithm is not taking into account, and correct me if I'm wrong, is how old you are once you're over 60. In other words, if you're 140 or if you're 60 and one day, you go into the same system. There's no weighted preference there. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So our oldest person we've registered so far was born in 1902, so is over 110.
Wow, I was just being dramatic, but that's incredible.
Preference because of her age, but because she managed to register early.
Right. Okay, so that's interesting. So your age over 60 is irrelevant. What about comorbidities?
No, so comorbidities, we don't ask on the registration what your medical history is, and there are lots of problems around collecting people's individual medical history, and even verifying it at a point of service. Imagine how it would slow up the queues if we have to prove that you're a diabetic or hypertensive or call for letters from doctors and so on. It would be chaos. The Ministerial Advisory Committee has looked at this extensively, and they advise that comorbidities are so common in the over 60s category that they said we must just stick with the over 60s as our definition, and that will mean that we'll get most people, the highest concentration of people with comorbidity. That's not to say there aren't many people under 60 with comorbidities.
Right, that was going to be my next question. So at the moment, if you are 55 and have high blood pressure, asthma, whatever it is, you still can't register. There's no allowance to register for somebody under the age of 60 but with comorbidities.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so that is clear. What is the distinction you've already mentioned between being on a medical aid and not? Is if you're on a medical aid, you will try and be sent, let's say, to a private facility. But are there any other differences between being on a medical aid and not being on a medical aid?
No, not at all. I mean, the purpose for that providers and for ourselves to manage the payment, because you are not paying anything as an individual. If you're an insured person, your medical aid is paying, and if you're an uninsured person, the state is paying. So it's really just to try and make it simpler for us than sending invoices backwards and forwards to one another to pay for the service.
Right. Okay. So that's a record keeping and a payment thing. All the people that have gone, let's say, to the discovery facility to get their vaccine, would they all necessarily have been discovery members?
No. The bulk of them would have been insured with some medical scheme, but not necessarily discovery medical scheme.
Ah. Okay.
But they have. Check the people, uninsured people who have been sent to their site, and that's an agreement we have with all the private sites that they will also assist with uninsured people, but we control that in the numbers that we're able to send to them from the system.
Right. A few people saying, I'm just reading my SMS line, lots of comments about people being registered and not yet receiving their SMS. Mm. What would be, so now understanding how these algorithms work, that it's about as long as you're over 60, but you've got to be within 10 kilometers, maybe this person's not within 10 kilometers of a functioning facility. Would that be one of the reasons?
Yes, that's one of the reasons. So ultimately we will be over 3,000 sites. At the moment, we're not yet on, we're around 300 sites at the moment that are active, and it's picking up every day. But the other reason is if you think about numbers in a big way, we've had 3 million people who are registered so far, just over 3 million,
right,
of which round about 500,000 were vaccinated during Sisonke,
right,
and round about 300 and something thousand have been vaccinated since last Monday. So in easy round numbers to work with, about 800,000 out of an already known 3 million are vaccinated. So we've still got 2.2 million people that are already registered that we need to vaccinate. So you are somewhere in the queue, if you haven't been vaccinated yet, you're somewhere in the queue of 2.2 million people. And it's going to take a while to get to you.
What is the reason that there's this number of sites open versus your targeted number, and you're saying it's the new sites opening every day? What is the not a bottleneck, but what stops these sites from opening quicker?
Right, so there's a range of things. The first is that making sure that every site has their pharmacy permits, because they're working with Schedule 4 medicine, and they have to have a pharmacist and the necessary medical backup. They need to be properly registered to the department, so we know that that site is not a fly-by-night and that we can verify who the people are running the site. So that's part of it. The other part of it is that the vaccines are coming, that they are coming in weekly amounts, and the volumes are only picking up. So it doesn't help to start 3,000 sites when we have enough vaccine for 350 sites. So as the vaccine deliveries are becoming more regular and the release of the vaccines is predictable from the National Control Laboratory, it's easier for us as a country, both the public and the private sector, to schedule the introduction of additional sites. So from the EVDS, we can see where there are concentrations of registration. We can talk to one another and the providers, and we can make sure that they open sites where there are a lot of people registered.
And how is the procurement and delivery of vaccines going?
Yeah, fine. I mean, we compete on the global market, and it's been a very tough ride negotiating in a difficult global environment. But I think finally now we do have a plan, and we do have a very clear delivery expectation. Whether, of course, there are problems in the manufacturers, that's always what we hold our breath on. But right for now, we are expecting a constant stream of deliveries for the foreseeable future.
Right. One of the statements I think that your department made was it was just over 300,000 a week until the end of May, and then it was kicking up, I think, to double that.
Yeah.
Is that still on track?
Yes, that's all still on track.
And in terms of the Johnson & Johnson, I think there were just over a million or around about a million.
Yeah, 1.3 million. Mm. So, yeah, that is also still in the pipeline. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is an easier vaccine to manage from a pharmaceutical perspective because of its storage condition. So that is primarily going to be reserved for the deep rural areas,
right,
where it's very difficult to maintain cold chain conditions and fridges and long distances of transporting vaccines and so on.
I thought that there was a new ruling, and maybe South Africa's not yet following it, that the FDA suggested, or the CDC maybe, I'm sorry, suggested, said that you didn't need to keep the Pfizer in the conditions, the cold storage conditions that they had originally thought. Is South Africa following that protocol?
Yes, we are, and our regulator, the SAHPRA, who's our regulator, has relaxed the conditions for use in South Africa as well. So that makes life a lot easier, and
I'm sure
it makes it much easier for the forward planning and the distribution to the periphery. But it's still a much more labile biological product, and it has to be cared for very carefully, whereas the Johnson & Johnson is very similar to all the other vaccines that we're very familiar with.
Right. So we know how to treat that. We know how to manage those.
Yes. If I can just say there's one other thing we really want the public to know, and that is that the global evidence has also been that the interval between the two Pfizer vaccines...
That was going to be my next question, so awesome.
Okay, we'd like the public to know that the rule was 21 days when it started last Monday. So many people would have been given their vaccine, a callback card or a return date on 21 days. That is now no longer the case because we have been given the go-ahead by SAHPRA, and we are following the global trend, and it's now 42 days. So those who have had a vaccination will receive an SMS to only after 42 days. And if you try to come before that, the system will say it's a premature appointment and it won't allow you. So please do not return until you got the SMS to return for your second vaccination.
Yeah, and in fact, we confirmed that with Dr. Anton Meiberg, who's a COVID expert or frontline fighter, and he said the same thing. He said 42 days is a comfortable period. What happens though if people leave it longer than that, or if they don't get an SMS before that 42 days? Is there a way to follow up, or will it just happen automatically?
Okay, so it should happen automatically that you'll get the SMS. That's how the system is programmed. But if you have noted on your calendar the 42 days, and by the 43rd or 44th day you're not hearing anything, you could phone the helpline and they will check on the system to verify, in fact, that you are scheduled for a second dose. Obviously, now the timing of when we start to get the first people returning for their second dose, and if that happens at the same time as the introduction of the J&J vaccine, it complicates scheduling quite significantly, and we hope there are no bumps when that happens.
Right, of course, because it changes everything, doesn't it? Is it going to be the same? It has to be the same system because people register. Are people going to have the option as to what to choose?
No, that's an important question. Vaccine will be available at one site. For a lot of safety reasons, we don't want to mix the vaccines in that you have two or maybe even conceivably three or four vaccines in the same site will be way too difficult to administer, and it could result in people being given mixed vaccines, and all kinds of crazy things can happen. And we've seen international evidence of this in other countries. So we are only going to have one vaccine at a site, and if that's the site you go to, that's the vaccine that you're going to be injected with.
Right. In other words, site A will just be Pfizer, site B might just be Johnson & Johnson.
Yes.
And if you allocated there, it's not going to be something that you have a preference around.
No.
All right. So I think that answers a tremendous amount of questions. In terms of some of the challenges, we've only got a minute left, but obviously there's a lot of frustration around this in terms of South Africa. We've seen some negative, we're seeing negative press locally, we're seeing it overseas. What's your thoughts around that?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of disinformation in the marketplace. People have a one-off experience that might be negative. They put it out on Twitter, and then everyone thinks that that's how it works everywhere. We've had the opposite experience. The hundreds of people who have sent us their stories that are positive, notwithstanding they might wait in a long queue, but they got vaccinated. Our staff were polite. They didn't have any pain. They've had no side effects, and they're reporting it. So those are the ones that give us, who are working around the clock, the courage to get up every morning and say, hey, this is worthwhile. We really want to appeal to the public. It is so important that we all get vaccinated. It's in our individual interest, but it's in our collective interest. And if we want to get our economy going and we want to get our lives back, this is the right thing to do. And we will do our best from the health authorities to make sure that it happens.